I mentioned last week that I want to start talking about some of the things in direct association with Passover. And this is the first of a series. I will probably have another month from now, and I'll have another subject matter related to the Passover. To tell you what is happening or what's going to happen, is that we have to kind of remember where we're heading. And where we're heading, it really is the beginning of the story for all of us, is the actual Passover itself, and then that continues on, and the recycle goes over and over and over again. And every year, when you come to another point, or another beginning point, like the Passover, there are things that we should be put back into memory, and perhaps sometimes look and see some of the things we have believed in and have done and changed and altered because it did not seem to gel with what I would say with the word or the will of the Creator. And so the object of my message today is actually going to be centered around 1 Corinthians and the 10th and 11th chapter. We'll not be going through every detail of it, but I want to talk about a few things first so you can have a picture. And there are two people outside of my wife who've been at least 40 years plus doing things what's called the Passover or some form of Passover service. And so we go back in time and like you know, over 40 years ago, I had kept the Passover or what's called the Lord's Supper. The Apostle Paul calls it that at different times and at different methods. And there are many years that the church which I belong to or have been part of, and maybe some segments have broken away from that church who do the very same process, have the very same thing, and that is that we have the breaking of the bread and the wine and the washing of feet on the 13th day of the first month. The reason behind that thinking is because that's when they, the church, believes. And still probably still does. I do not know. It's not a matter to me. I tell you, I firmly believed it with all my mind, with all my heart, all my soul, that the 13th was a very, very important date. And that that was the night which he was betrayed. Because he couldn't possibly do it on Passover. Right? So we got that picture. We got that understanding together. As the years went by, we began to come to understand we had left the Worldwide Church of God back in 79, I guess it was, some years ago. And we still kept on the same passing. We kept on the same pattern of the 13th day of the month. And we did because that's what we were taught, and it's something we believed in very strongly and held to our core. But as time goes by, you begin to go, okay, let's just read what it does say. And so we began to read what it does say. We said, okay, now wait a minute. When is Passover? Is Passover the 13th day of the month? Because that's what we believed, right? We had that doctrine. We also had a night. It's called Night Must Be Remembered. So on the 14th day of the month, we had what's called a Night to Remember. And we'd all go out to have a dinner, and dinner was catered. And there was a real quick, short message from whomever the minister was in that particular church or congregation. And so he'd give us a message, and we'd say, okay. Then we'd, like, that's a blessing. Then we'd have this wonderful thing. And we also did that when we left Worldwide Church of God. We kept the night to much remember, which is the 14th day of the first month. And so I asked myself, and my wife, actually not my wife, my wife started asking some questions. I didn't. Anyway, to make a long story short, you know, it was a wonderful time. I'm not saying those times are bad or rotten or no good. They were wonderful times. Wonderful times of learning. And understanding things and trying to understand. And my goal went then, as it had been, because I was taught that way, that on the night must be remembered, my job is to get up and talk to every person who's sitting at the table and talk with them and have a word of chit-chat with them because, you know, hey, I'm the boss. I mean, no. But no value anymore. Okay, so, and as time went by, make a long story short, we moved it that to make the Passover on the evening of the 14th, taking of the dinner. That was the sunset was down. It was beginning really of the 15th day of the month. Okay? And so we said, okay, now what will we do? Well, we started out doing what was called the Jewish Haggadah. And it was complete Jewish Haggadah. And to be honest with you, it was empty. It lacked anything. It lacked all things. I couldn't find any value in it, though we kept on for a couple, 3 years. And then, my son decided to make a Haggadah for us. And he did. And this time it included the Messiah, okay? So it kept all the things that listed there. Plus, we just brought in the Messiah into it to make it look like it's supposed to be. And as time went by, we started dropping all the other things. And this year, when I started thinking about the Passover at the Feast of Tabernacles. And you say, why then? Because that's the next scene that I must come about and figure out what does that mean now? Let's look at it and examine it one more time. And to make a long story short, we shortened the Haggadah down to nothing and real beef. And this year, my wife and I had a little heated argument. Oh, just a little one. Well, it lasted for about 4, 5, 6, 7 months. No. we're talking recently here. And so I went back, re-looked at the Haggadah, which we have written out, and then I couldn't find any value. Why is this there for? It doesn't say in the Torah. Has no value. And what I have tried to do in the past is try to make this thing that we do relate it to something of God. And, okay, I think I covered that one, okay? And then we did this one and did that one all the way down now. And basically, what does the Torah say that we should do? And that's where we're at today. There's three things that's required. And that is, what? The lamb, bitter herbs, and matzah. And I'm going to read one more thing. And here we are in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. If you want a title for our message today, I'll use the Apostle Paul. I would not that ye should be ignorant. That's not a very good statement, is it? Now, in verse 1, he says that how that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. So we go, yeah, okay, I got that. I understand that. Plain as day, right? So I started looking, what is ignorance? Now, we have a good definition, but see, in Greek, there are two meanings for the word ignorance. One of them is not being told, therefore you did not know. And the other one is you don't want to know because it's, what is the Greek thing for it? It requires intelligence. Requires you to think. And so the Greek word can mean either you don't know because you've not been told, or because you're not thinking what is being told. So we have those two things. Dave.
I'd like to be reminded that the base word of ignorance is ignore.
Right.
That's actually not true. I've actually looked up the etymology of the word ignorance, and the word ignorant actually existed about 200 years before the verb ignore existed.
Okay.
So it's really just from the Latin, has absolutely nothing to do with an attitude or a behavior. It has to do with the fact that someone does not know something.
Correct. I'm not talking about the word ignorance that we have it. I'm talking about the Greek word. Which I didn't list the Greek word about it. Now, his tongue-in-cheek statement, I agree, it's kind of funny because it is ignoring it. And I don't have a problem with he always has tongue-in-cheek statement. That's what he gets paid for. But nonetheless, I want you to come to understand the Greek meaning of the terminology. So we have a picture here within us. One of them not knowing, because you're not told. And the other ones is you don't have the intelligence or you refuse to think about what is being presented. All right? So Apostle Paul comes in with saying, before we go there, I want to read off some things. Remember in Acts, don't have to turn there, Acts 17, chapter, verse 23, where the Apostle Paul came amongst the Greeks, and they had this unknown God, right? Unknown. And he said to them, "Therefore ye ignorantly worship, I declare him unto you." Now, we could use that word ignorantly, meaning you're not aware of it, or Apostle Paul is telling these Greeks, you're not thinking it through. Your intelligence is not up to par because you're just accepting this and you're not thinking all the way through. And that's why some of the Greeks, I got to think about this. And a lot of them began to shift because they had to start thinking about this unknown God. Whether then not having thinking about or analyzing what do you mean by the unknown God. Okay, so kind of unusual statement, right? That's one of the examples of being one who is intellectually, willingly, not wanting to think about it. Just do it. Just do it. Now, in Luke, the 9th chapter, I want you to turn there for just a minute. Luke 9th chapter, verse 18. Read something that's very unusual here, because here it kind of tells us of something a little bit different. Breaking in the middle of a thought. And it came to pass that he, Yahshua, was alone praying. His disciples were with him. And then he asked them, saying, "Whom say the people that I am?" They answered and said, "John the Baptist, or Elijah, or others say, one of the old prophets has risen." And verse 20 says, "Well, who do ye say I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Messiah of God." And Matthew says the very same thing, except he adds on the Son of God, the Son of Living God. And verse 21 is very fascinating. And he straightly charged them and commanded them to tell no man that thing. Think that was odd? In one way, he's telling his disciples, I want you to keep people ignorant of that. Don't tell them. Does that sound fair? Does that sound logical? No, it doesn't in our human thinking, right? But you know, as Jeff brought out, there are things that are there, and then he says what they are referring to when we start looking at it in the prophets and seeing the parallel. On the seven things he had been talking about the last two times, everything he's quoted comes from the prophets and from the Torah and from the writings. He never used a New Testament statement. And we people, the Psalms that he's got written in the first chapter and second chapter of Luke, tells us something that is greater than just a bunch of words. And like he has said, it's not a B plan. Always was A. Always was from the beginning. And a lot of people, and I use this expression, well, it didn't work with the Jews, so therefore he's going and using it with the Christians instead now. Well, what the whole thing of replacement theology concept. Many of you have heard that. But here Jesus is telling them, don't tell them. And continue on in Luke 9. It goes on with the story. I'll just read parts of this thing. Verse 26. "Therefore shall if you be ashamed, if anyone ashamed of me and my words, to him I shall be, the Son of Man shall be ashamed, when he shall come in his own glory and the glory of his Father, the glory of his Son, of the angels." And I tell you, verse 27, very fascinating here now. "I tell you the truth, there are some standing here which shall not taste death until they see the kingdom of God." Okay. Then, of course, 8 days later, he took John and James. He went up the mountain. And then, verse 29, "they saw the fashion of his countenance was altered radically, and his garments were white, pure. And there stood before him two men, Moses and Elijah, Now, I find this very fascinating because, see, I remember reading the story before, but I never really paid attention what was going on until I decided reading it again. What were they talking about? Verse 31, who appeared in glory, spoke of his decease, the way of him dying, which he should accomplish at Jerusalem. That's what they were talking about. They're talking about his death and how he should die and the way he should die. And what happened to the apostles, the three men? Did he, oh, I got it? No. They remained unaware, ignorant of it. All right. Now, Jesus continues on here. Yeshua continues on and says, I don't want you, three men, to tell anybody what you just got to see. Right? Wait a minute. Are you deliberately telling the disciples to make sure that you keep the people in ignorance, including the other disciples who were not there? The answer is yes. Is that fair? So what I'm asking you, what I'm trying to lead to here, is that when we come along and we do a lot of things, we have to ask ourselves some really interesting questions. A lot more things going down, and verse 35, I'm just breaking into the middle of thoughts here. You can read the whole chapter if you wish. Anyways, a voice that came down that said something to these three men. What did it say? This is my beloved son. Hear him. Wow. But they didn't understand. And following the next day, it came down, and there was a person who had one of the people in the group had a child who was being demon-possessed. And so he came up and he asked Yahshua that he would heal him. Now, the funny thing about this, yes, he did. However, did you read verse 41? Yahshua said something very strange when the man asked this question. Listen. O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you and suffer you? Bring thy son. And now, does that sound like a loving, compassionate, warm man who just said, oh, yes, bring your son forward. He just got to telling this man, perverse generation. Wow, wow, wow. What a statement. Don't you think it's pretty powerful? Okay. In verse 44, he's telling them something. Verse 45, rather. Very fascinating thing. 44 verse. He said, let these sink down in your ear. He's talking to his disciples. For the Son of Man shall be delivered into the hands of men. What's that have to do with all that kind of stuff? Remember the vision they saw? They didn't listen to what was going on. Though they would have had to hear because they wrote it down. At least one of these three men did. Since the book of Luke, it's probably Peter. Anyway, I'll just make a long story short. Let's go back to 1 Corinthians. There are things that are hidden, and God hides them for a long period of time. Jeff talked about he hides his face. Why isn't God a loving God that opens up and says, look, I'm looking at you? Why is he hiding his face? And Jeff brought this out. It's for you and me to seek his face. We must seek him. He doesn't need to seek us. Once we seek him, then he will see us face to face. That makes sense to you? Now, mankind has been put in the dark for a long time. We're back at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I had to ask myself some questions here because, see, I've been the Passover has been something that I have to overwork in order to understand it. I pay attention to words. I pay attention to a lot of words. Verse 2. And we're all baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. Number 1. They all did eat the same spiritual meat, number 2. Verse 4. And they did drink of the same spiritual drink that they drank from the spiritual rock, who was the Messiah. And I said, oh yeah, I got the story, right? I know, yeah, they went through the air, and then they had manna. That's a spiritual meat, right? And then the rock was split, and out comes the water. Therefore, they got to drink that too, right? That must be the spiritual water, right? No, this is not what the chapter talks about. Nor does the 11th chapter talk about it. What does the 11th and 12th chapter talk about? The bread broken and the wine. Oh. Spiritual drink. They all drank of the spiritual drink. And at the Messiah's death, what did he give them? Wine, which was a spiritual drink of his life. I personally believe that when he talks about spiritual drink and spiritual meat, and they're baptized through the cloud and through the sea, he's aiming at one subject matter, Passover time. Now, since we don't have what's written, quote, at the time of Passover, quote, the first Passover, quote, about drinking wine, we assume they didn't have any. However, soon afterwards, they had wine. Where did they get it from? Did they bring it with them? How could they have a sacrifice with wine when they don't have wine? They always had it with them. Now, they ask the questions, you know. So I look at this thing and I says, wow, I never really paid attention to what he meant by spiritual meat. Is a spiritual meat, what is it? Was it the lamb? What did he say? When the unleavened bread is the broken body of the Messiah. All right? So that spiritual meat, in Greek, the word meat can refer to just eating food. As it is in Hebrew, when they use the word lachem, it means of eating food. Yes, it can and does mean bread, but not all the times. I'll use some examples. In our country, and it's not used anymore, but growing up, there was this person called the bread earner. Now, did the old man go out and get bread and bring it home? No, we know what that means, right? Bringing in the food. But he didn't really buy it, did he? He had to work, bring in the money. Then his wife went out and got the food. Is she the breadwinner? Well, no. Or we always had that one, something about a pig. Remember what it was? I'm sorry, what? Bring home the bacon. That's the word. Bring home the bacon. Well, that's the saying we use, right? Okay. That's the bill. You may laugh at it. But what I'm saying is that when we talk about phrases of that's written in the Bible, we got to be careful that we don't literally make it what it really seems to say. Because guess what? My mother brought home the bacon. Literally, no. She didn't. She didn't like bacon. So she never bought it. That's it. My mother was the only breadwinner. She went out and worked, and guess what? We got food to eat. Sometimes literally it was bread. But anyway. But you see what I'm trying to get at? There's three things here I find very fascinating. Now, let's move on quickly. I want to know, verse 16 of chapter 10. In the Christian world, I might have this wrong, but I think it was something like Worldwide Church of God used to do, or still does. I don't know if what they do, to tell you the honest truth. But they always had the breaking of the bread and of the wine. It's called the Lord's Supper, right? And Apostle Paul calls it that. But, oh, wait, before I say that, I want to say one more thing. when Apostle Paul talked about them going through, and they were there and learning things, they learned the Ten Commandments and all that kind of stuff. Verse 11, he says, what has happened for them is this. Now, at all things happen unto them, for examples, that they may be written for our admonition. We got that, right? What does the last statement say? Upon whom the ends or the days or times of the world are coming or to come. The reason why all that was done is for now, not then. So when we keep or observe something in relationship to Passover, it is for now, not then. It started then, yes. Now we go to this point. It's coming to an end, a completion, a finishing story. And what did you do? Have you ever thought about that before? Drop down to verse 16. He says, this is very fascinating. The cup of blessing, which we bless. We fill a cup, right? Every single Shabbat, right? Is it not the communion with the blood of the Messiah? Now, he's not talking about daily weekly, because this whole book is about Passover time. Everything about Passover time. And they did something the last Passover, which was contrary, and Apostle Paul got on their case. Now, he's correcting them for their conduct of the last time they held Passover, because chapter 5, he talks about, you are now unleavened, and Messiah is your Passover. So we're talking about this same subject matter. So talk about a cup of blessing. And he said, and the bread which we break, is it not communion with the body of the Messiah? Now, those are pretty important things, don't you think? Yes, I looked at this thing and I said, okay, what did I do? What does communion mean? Well, in Greek, it means being friends, having fellowship with, association with, or being sharing something with. So when we do this, he says to do something about it. And what does Apostle Paul reach into there? Well, we know. It is to do what? Why do we do this? Just because it's commanded? Or is it because it still let us to know something about Passover time? Is it just about being freed from bondage? The truth is, yes. Once you have been freed from bondage, you know what the commandment says, right? I am the Lord your God who brought you out of bondage. Therefore, you'll have no other Elohim except me. Bondage. Apostle Paul calls sin a bondage. But it's also bondage to this world. Are you in bondage to this world? They say, oh, no, of course I'm not. Oh, really? Do you have to do things according to the law, which is a bondage to you? Let's suppose you pay taxes. And you know that money is going to go to kill a baby because you're paying taxes. What happens if you don't pay taxes that kills the baby? You're put in prison. You go to jail. Unless, of course, you're some kind of big official that gets away with it. But you're not, right? You're in bondage. They're not. And you've been put in bondage. You do things you don't want to do. You're committed to do things you don't want to do. You're forced to do things you don't want to do. That's of this world. But are you in the world or are you of the world? You're just in it. You're not of it. You shouldn't be in here. That's all. Now, that being said, verse 10, verse 20, I say unto you, things that which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to Elohim or God. And would not that you should have fellowship with devils. Oh, you know what? How many of you quit Christmas? Easter? Halloween? Any of the other ones? I can't remember them all, to tell you the truth. And we say to ourselves, okay, I'm not doing that. Wait a minute. What's he talking about? Christmas? didn't exist then. He's talking about the sunrise service for Easter Sunday. Well, he's talking about Valentine's Day. He's talking about New Year's Day, where everybody gets drunk. What's he talking about? Something's been sacrificed in direct relationship to Passover. This subject matter is full of the Passover. These two chapters are full of the Passover. So there was something going on. I do not know what it was, and I cannot find the history. All I know, he says here, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord, which is a cup of blessing, and the cup of devils. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and the table of the devils. Pretty strong words, aren't they? So he says, okay, now, he was angry with these people because in chapter 5, what were they doing? You remember the man who was having a relationship with his his dad's wife? He says, cast him out. And he chastised them for not upholding what is true and what is right. So what table are we going to eat tomorrow or this week, this year? In Corinthians, the 11th chapter, I'm going to start out there. It's strange when you read about Corinthians, 11th chapter, you say, what is it really all about? And it really is about taking of what's called the Lord's Supper. Now, verse 17 of 1 Corinthians 11, he's talking about the Passover, or the Lord's Supper, as it's called. Now, in this I declare unto you, I praise you not, that ye come together, not for the better, but for the worse. So they are coming together, aren't they, as a group? They're coming together to do something, and this particular chapter talks about what's called the Lord's Supper, or the Lord's Table. You're sitting at the table of the Creator of heaven and earth's Son. Pretty powerful statement, isn't it? He is the director of the table. Isn't that right? So that's how I would look at it. If I went to the president's house, I'd be at the president's table. Would I not be? Yes, because not my table. It's the president's table. And back during the time of Samuel, David, he went to Solomon's table. He went to the king's table. It wasn't David's table. It was Solomon's table. Okay? So get understanding that the host of this Passover is the Lord. Now, we can say lowercase L-O-R-D, or we can say the Creator of heaven and earth. Because it is He who gave up His Son's life. So you start looking at this thing, you start saying, okay, let's elevate this thing up to a different purpose, a different direction. Yes, Yahshua is our Lord. Yes, He is our Savior. But He also has a Lord. He also has a Lord. And His Lord is the Creator of heaven and earth. Verse 20, therefore, when you come together in one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Now, it's really odd there, because it should be a question mark, in my personal opinion, because they tell that you should come together. When you come together, is this not for the table? Because the rest of the questions are always, next statement you use are always your questions. And they were behaving uncomely. They started eating when no one was there. They started getting drunk. They're throwing the whole thing completely amiss. Does that mean we should not come together? We should not wait upon one another? We should not be doing what they did. Why? Because it's the Lord's table. It's the Lord's table. Very important table. Very important time to come together. At the end of the chapter, we'll see this. Verse 23, for I have received the Lord, which I also delivered unto you. Verse 34, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. That's the Lord's table. When do you do that? and a cup. This cup is a New Testament of my blood. Did you catch that? If the blood is the what? New Testament. Why did he say New Testament? Why didn't he say of my life? Well, it was his life, yes. But what is the New Testament? What is it he said he was going to do? What is the New Testament about? I'm sorry, what? Yeah, what? Why the New Testament?
He changed the symbols, did he not?
In your mind. Write my law, my laws in your mind and your heart. That is what the New Testament is all about, and that's what the blood of the Messiah is all about. Am I getting it wrong? Am I interpreting something there that's not really there? I really say, well, not really. It really is not about the New Testament. It really is about, you know, him dying for my sins and my transgressions and taking away the sin. Yeah, okay. What's he going to present in his place? Life. And he said there in John, we will not talk about that today, but with John 17, I think it's 15th chapter, I am the vine and you are the branches. Without me, you can produce no life. So he is a living thing, and the New Testament is a living thing. And so when we come to the New Testament, or we come to the time of eating of the Lord's Supper, or partaking of it, we have to kind of put things together in our mind. Why is the Apostle Paul, and we'll go to other sections in the New Testament, by the way, later on, maybe a month from now, and go into some more details of what actually was said, because a reason why I read this section, this is my beloved son, hear him. Because if we don't hear him, my personal belief, I'm going to get it wrong. If I interpret it because someone else interprets it, I'm going to get it wrong. I've got to go to him and hear what he says to understand what it's all about. And we will cover that in about a month from now. So you have another idea what my next subject matter is. But we come down here to the very last chapter, verse 33 of 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Now he didn't say, wherefore, my brethren, when ye come together to eat, referring to the Lord's table, tarry for one another. Wait upon one another. Take consideration with one another. Now, are we becoming ignorant? Are we becoming the point where we can realm on, I have the intelligence to think this out, to think through? What is it that this apostle who said, I have heard this directly from Yahshua himself? This is what he said to me, and now I'm telling you what he said. And so when we have this Passover coming up, things will change, true. But I want to always focus in, help us to focus in, because he later on tells, oh, I'm not going to go there today, about us examining ourselves. That will come a little later. What do you examine? What do you look at? What do you find? And, you know, what Jeff said today, I can't remember the exact wording he said, but there are people who are kind of stuck in Hebrews 10. They believe they're living in a world of condemnation. They believe they're living in a world of no hope. They believe they're living in a world there is no future. Many of you probably have met somebody or know somebody that believes that. And he said, Jeff said, if God's still talking with you, and if you are listening to him, No, he said both things, right? If God's talking with you and you're listening to him, it doesn't apply. So in this Passover that's coming up, my purpose of today was to come and think about the bread and drinking of the Lord's, it was called the cup of the Lord, that we eat the bread and drink the cup. What is it we're going to do? What's important to you and what's important to me may be different things in relationship to the Passover. Maybe the things that are more important to you are good. That's not saying they're bad. The things that are important to me are still good. They may not be that. Maybe other things that you have in mind or thinking that it's important. And the one thing I've been asking God for since the feast was, help me, Almighty Father, to honor you above all. And this is what I want to look at Passover. Because without its beginning, there is no end. If I don't have the beginning of what it's about, I don't have an end. Yes, we are coming out of bondage. We are out of bondage. And we have to be careful we don't put ourselves back in. Let me ask you some questions. Do not raise your hand. How many of you are personally in bondage to the financial system of this world? Well, don't raise your hand. But you are in bondage. You can do nothing except what they tell you you can do. Even when our president gave all the money to these big banks, the banks had wanted to pay it off overnight. They said, no, you will withhold all payments and you will not pay us until we tell you to pay us, and you will pay us when we say you pay us, and you'll pay us with interest due. None of the banks could pay it off. They had to wait for permission from the President of the United States and his team for them to say, yes, you may make this payment and this much only, and not a penny more. Then we'll charge you interest, and you'll be required to hold that interest to add it to the next month, just like you do houses, right? Add it to the next month's bill. Now, these guys, the banks had billions and billions of bucks. They pay off the thing quickly. If you had, let's say you had, each one of you had maybe $300,000 cash. You probably say, I'm going to get rid of this big, huge burden quick. Get rid of the house or get rid of whatever that burden is. Taking away the most of your money. Get rid of it first. But the bank says, you cannot do that. It's against the law. You must pay us the minimum amount and we'll charge you 35% of due next month. And you would say, that's against the law. And of course it would be. But you can't do that. Don't have that permission in a world of bondage. I've got one more minute. We'll close right here at 4 o'clock. God willing. Now, I don't have an awful lot of subject matters to talk today. I just want to introduce what I'm thinking about and what's going to happen after we close for today, that we'll have our wine and our bread and all that stuff that we normally do. And then the dinner will be served. And by the time the dinner is being served, my wife will want to come up here and introduce some things that we might, hopefully, that may be done differently than we have done before. Basically, I'm telling you that the Haggadah, oven by itself, is 100% Jewish. I cannot make it Christian. I cannot make it New Testament. I haven't found the way to do it. And one of the discussions my wife and I had was, okay, what you doing? Putting this burden back on me again? It was kind of like, you know, I don't want, you know, this is not working. What are you putting me back on me for, you know? And so this back and forth was for a while. And, you know, it's funny in one way, looking back on it, but the other point, I needed input, I needed information, I needed someone to say, okay, why don't we find out what really took place back during that time, and let's see if we cannot have a picture of what really took place back at that time, and bring it forward.